Well, the Park City Women's Business Network named its Businesswoman of the Year at yesterday's luncheon. In the studio with me, I have the president of the network, Kathleen Barlow, along with this year's winner, Kristen Fox. Good morning and congratulations to you, Kristen.
Good morning.
Thank you.
So, Kathleen, let's just begin with you. Maybe just give us an overview of the Women's Business Network and the annual award.
Yeah, sure. So the network has been around for probably 20, 25 years in Park City. It is a group of women in Park City in business. People work for themselves. People work for other entities. And it is a group of women that support each other. And as the president and the board, we try to provide space for these women every month to come and network and use each other's resources. We also provide education through speakers and panels, things like that.
All right. So you meet monthly at different locations with
Correct.
Different topics. And then what's the cost then just to be
so
part
a
of
cost
this group?
For a membership is $75 a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think you meet Tuesdays.
Yeah, we meet the second Tuesday of every month. Never changes. It's always second Tuesday.
Okay. And then you started doing these awards,
yes.
I think, as a fundraiser, yeah, for the high school scholarship fund? Or?
So that's a good comment, Leslie. I'm not sure how it started, if they were together, because we've been doing it for probably 15 years. So before my time, they started it. So Woman of the Year is something that is we do to highlight not only one woman, but the women who are nominated as well. There are many really great women in this community that do a lot of different things, and the network just feels that it's a good thing to recognize them once a year.
All right. So Kristen was one of how many nominees?
Five.
Five. Okay. And then the board decides who the winner
no.
is?
No. So we send out information to the network for nominations. And then after we get the nominations, we put the nominees out there and the members vote.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, again, congratulations, Kristen. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Leslie. Well, I was so flattered to be included in this group of nominees because it was amazing. Some of the women and what they're doing are just mind-blowing. But this year, I think what tipped it for me was that I ended up going through cancer and opened a third company last year. And it's called Uplift Gift. And so I ended up opening it because so many women came to me after I went through cancer and said, what was a meaningful gift? What should I say to my friend? I don't know what to say. And having gone through it, I had felt that panic when I saw someone at the grocery store and didn't know what to say before I went through it myself. So I decided there was a way to answer a need for people to find a beautiful gift and a beautiful card that says what they really feel uncomfortable about saying themselves.
All right. So it's just something that's emailed or mailed?
It's actually e-commerce. So we've got a website and you buy a gift box or a gift. You can make your own or they're curated gifts. And they optionally have wine, of course, since I'm all in the wine world. You can buy them online and then we send them out to your friend.
Yeah. Well, so some people can barely handle one business and now you're running three?
Well, I'm very busy right now, but I have a lot of people helping me now and it's working. I get a few hours of sleep every night now.
Yeah, so the other two businesses are related to the wine.
Right. I have Fox School of Wine in town, and then I also have an online business called Culinary Wine Institute, and we do wine sales training for restaurant servers, training, certification, that kind of thing.
Yeah. How did you get involved in the wine business?
Well, actually, my daughter said it best when I said I thought I'd go into wine education. She said, oh, so you're going to have people help you pay for the wine you'd be buying for yourself anyway? I was like, yeah, pretty much. That's it.
Smart girl. So,
right off a passion is really what it is. Yeah. And I love it. It's such a great connector in the world.
Yeah. So you do both the School of Wine, and that's for anybody who wants to learn more about?
Right. That's mm-hmm. a public program here in Park City. We offer classes on the weekends. And then Culinary Wine Institute's online. And then now Uplift Gift is online. And then we do the fulfillment out of Park City right now. Until we get big enough where we need to actually use a fulfillment center. Right now, it's just in my basement.
So it must feel great to be recognized for that hard work, especially going through, you know, the sickness and, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. It was amazing because the women that were nominated this year, at least as far as I could tell, everybody had more about the service to others as an emphasis rather than the bottom line. So it wasn't like everyone was awarded this year, they were nominated based on how many dollars they're generating. It's about the passion and supporting other people. And the money will come when you are engaged in your passion and you're energetically supporting other people. So it was very flattering.
Yeah. Yes. Well, then congratulations. So Kathleen, tell me a little bit what you heard about Kristen in terms of being her nomination.
Yeah, so that's a good question. And I have to do a disclaimer. I am friends with Kristen, so I know her. But the things that I heard from the group were the biggest piece was coming out of her cancer and looking at it from a different perspective and how can she do something to help other people who are going through the same thing. And so that was the biggest kind of comment from everybody, that how do you turn such a trauma into something not just for yourself, but to help other people. And so that was the biggest piece. And I'd say from my experience being friends with Kristen, the other thing she has a big passion for is just helping other small business people. And, you know, very inquisitive, very curious, asking, how do you do this and how do you do that? And giving her opinion from, she's a great marketer. So, you know, giving that advice just because she has a passion for it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, while you've got the microphone here, tell us, I know you do raise a bunch of money
for
high school graduates. Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit more about that.
So we have a scholarship fund for girls at Park City High School. And the process is we donate money to the Park City Education Foundation in our name, in our Women's Business Network name. And so far, past couple years, last year we raised $15,000. This year our goal is $18,000, and we're really close. The biggest piece of that for our network is to support girls coming into the world. Most of these girls are going into industries that are very male-dominated. A lot of science, a lot of medical, engineering. And for us to be able to recognize them and saying, hey, we're behind you, even though it's, for right now, it's because we're writing them a check, it makes a big difference for them. There are also girls that apply for this scholarship that might not be able to go to college if they don't get the scholarship. And that is a big aha for us. So our process is we go through applications. We get about 35 to 40 applications. We read through them anonymously, and then we narrow it down to about 10 to 15, and then we interview those girls, and then we decide. I have to admit, though, over the last couple years, we were not be able to break down lower than that number. So all the girls that we met, we worked it out so everyone got something. It's an amazing process. And we have a month and a half left to reach our goal. I didn't calculate the money that we made yesterday from the luncheon because we had some donations. I think we're probably around 16,000. So we have 2,000 between now and the end of May. We have an opportunity drawing. And it is a public opportunity. It is a luxury weekend in Park City. So it is a stay at the Canyons, one night, dinner for two at Butcher's, $250 towards spa services at Silver Mountain Spa, and a half day fly fishing with Park City Fly Fishing. On our website, there is a link to the opportunity drawing. Our website is www.pcwbn.org. Look for the opportunity drawing. It's one ticket for $20, three for $50. It's a no-brainer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Again, congratulations to
you.
And thanks both for coming
thanks,
in this
Leslie.
Morning. The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission met last night. The major topic there, the proposed Woodward at Gargozza. On the phone with a recap, I have Planning Commission Chairwoman Bea Peck. Good morning, Bea.
Good morning.
So this was an introduction, but you did see some early numbers in terms of use here. The applicant presented some data on carrying capacity. I think the maximum number was just shy of 1,300 people. Is that what you remember?
I think the max was 1,270, but the reality of it was something like 80% of that would be their what their design purposes would be. That's what they would plan for. And some of those numbers that were presented to us was on a nice study that was done by them, but that was the first time we had seen it. We didn't get a chance to preview it. So it was a little difficult to kind of drill down on some of the specifics, but we'll get another work session once we've got it, review it, and then we can ask a lot more better questions. Last night was just sort of presenting it to us and giving a preview.
Yeah. Project planner Michael Brill had said that he feels like the numbers can be limited just through the amount of parking. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, chicken or the egg. So, again, they've got they're going to give us a better idea on parking. They're trying to expand parking to around 333 spaces. I'm not sure how that works with a carrying capacity or an expected capacity of 1,000 to maybe upwards of, 2,000 a day, doing all the various activities, including the tubing. And that's probably during the winter when all the activities will be going on. Summer, I think, will be more limited. But as I say, it's a balancing act, and they're going to present us with a lot more information because obviously we have questions about that, about traffic, transportation, what the impacts are going to be for us to measure whether this is appropriate for a conditional use permit.
Yeah, and of course, traffic is a huge concern for those living in the area. A consultant from the engineering group showed a graphic that indicated that the Woodward traffic will be just an increment of what is already there. As Commissioner Chuck Klingenstein noted, though, how do you calculate all of the different traffic streams? I mean, if it's traffic for Woodward, or visitors for other recreation, the Wileman School, or just other traffic on the road?
Yeah, it's obvious that Kilby Road is going to have a lot of pressure on it, and just, in layman's terms, knowing that there's a new project coming in, residential project Discovery, the school, this project from Summit Park, increased use of the Jeremy Ranch Junction, I mean, all those things. I was pleased to see that they were going to incorporate all that into the updated study that they'll be presenting, because I didn't feel it was present in the 2015 study. So that was good news. They anticipated us on that one.
Yeah. Commissioner Klingenstein also seemed to feel like the project could be better planned for the long term if it's a spa or specially planned area rather than a conditional use permit. Do you have any opinion on that?
Well, what's before us is a conditional use permit. So I suppose if we didn't approve this, they would have to go back to the drawing board and see if they then wanted to apply for a rezone, which is a much more complicated procedure, has a lot more criteria. I don't know that it's appropriate for this, and we will wait before we weigh that. We're analyzing it under the application that's before us for a CUP and determine whether the use is appropriate. But Chuck is right. We have asked questions in terms of what does this look like in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and if they were to sell it and some other purpose or some other expansion were being sought. I think we're trying to just do as good a job as we can as nailing down what this is going to look like and try to predict what it will be in 20 years and not get surprises. And a CUP can be a surprise. I mean, every, few years there may be updates or revisions. So I think Chuck felt that something like a rezone to a resort center with a development agreement would have a lot more strength to it, but that's not necessarily so. So, but we're gonna analyze it and look at it. This will be a heavily perused project.
Yeah. Also concerned about what kind of entry statement this will be. What are your initial thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's come up, too, on Viewshed 1, coming down Parley's and get your first look. What does it do? Right now, obviously, you see a tubing hill, but this will be expanded in terms of making a greater ski hill and a large building, 50,000 square feet. So, we've asked for some more visuals or graphics on that so we can try to get an idea what that might look like from the highway, but so I don't have a formed opinion yet, but I sure want the information.
Yeah, and not only just a large building at 50,000 square foot, which is the size of a small grocery store, I'm guessing, but also tall, right?
Well, the way they're setting it, and the council, I think, I read all their minutes and reports, it'll be set down, I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly, but it won't be 45 feet from, say, the level of the highway. It'll be set down the hillside, so the effective height of that, it won't look like it's 45 feet. At least that's what we're being told, which is why we're asking for more visuals and graphics.
Right. All right. Also, just maybe you want to quickly preview next week's meeting, kind of unusual that you're meeting 3 weeks in a row.
Well, we've got a lot going on, and we've had a lot of work sessions. The Canyon Spa we've been working on, and we've been trying to put in as many work sessions as we can before we go to the public hearing, so we feel like we've really, you know, vetted and examined every aspect that we can before we set it out to the public. So, it has been busy.
Yeah, there certainly is a you know, some that think out there that a way, you know, when we talk about managing growth, I mean, a growth management tool is not holding extra meetings, just making people wait, delaying development.
I don't know that that's a tool. I think that we have an obligation to get the information and vet these projects and be able to ask a lot of questions. So I know as a group, we feel like the more time we spend getting the details and exploring all of the aspects of these projects, I think that's a better service to the public on whether something is inappropriate. I sure don't see delay as an effective tool or one, you know, seems a little arbitrary to me.
Well, a service to the public or a service to the developer?
I think it's a service to the public. We're asking all the hard questions, right questions, and pushing hard to get answers and, frankly, scheduling more work schedules and getting that information is a far cry from just moving it along. So,
all right.
I feel like we're serving the public and our community interests.
Okay.
Certainly not making it easier for the developer in any way.
It looks like for the near future you will be starting meetings at 4:30. How come?
Well, we've been doing work sessions at 4:30, and again, it's because of the calendar and and the type of meetings we had. We're trying to avoid, in some ways, starting at 6 and being there, you know, past 10, where we have to take other procedural actions. And sometimes an applicant has been there, waited till 10 o'clock, and we, frankly, were too, you know, dazed and confused after 4 hours. To then tackle another, you know, intricate project. So we all agree that we could start work sessions at 4:30. Yesterday we started the regular session at 4:30 because of Gorgoza, we knew that was going to take some time. So we're trying to be thoughtful of the public if they're there for a hearing. We're trying to be thoughtful of the applicant to give them the time that's needed. And we're all willing to put in the extra hours. So.
Okay. Anything else, Bea, you wanted to mention?
No, just that there are public hearings coming up, and we invite everyone and anyone who's interested and hear what's going on. I would encourage a lot of good participation.
Okay. BPAC Chair of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, thanks for your time. 8:32 now. Good morning. Well, the Park City Council meeting tomorrow and a work session starting at 5 o'clock, the regular meeting at 6. In the studio with a preview, I have Park City Manager Diane Foster along with Community Engagement Manager Linda Jager. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Linda, you have a half hour in work session to discuss the Council's top priority for citizen involvement. What do you have planned there?
Well, we're actually sharing our plan, which we've been working on, a strategic plan over the last several months. And as our staff has come together, there was a bit of a reorganization in that department when we started in August. So we're excited to share some of our accomplishments as well as some recommendations going forward.
Okay, so what do some of those recommendations look like?
Well, we're looking at actually taking advantage of some unique social media platforms. So there is a great community engagement software program that a lot of us saw when we went on the city tour in Aspen. It's called Aspen Community Engagement. And so it's a good opportunity for folks to go on and review projects, have dialogue, ask questions. Those that may not be able to attend a city council meeting or maybe one of our council outreach series, it's another way for them to engage and ask questions.
Yeah. So why are we spending all of this time and money on engaging people who may not even want to be engaged?
Well, actually,
or don't care.
Well, I'm finding that most people do want to be engaged, and they do want to have an opportunity to contribute and find out information about projects that will impact them. So our goal is to really present that information in different formats and make it easier for folks to engage, whether it's coming to a meeting or online or coming to city council.
Okay. So what are we putting towards this effort then financially? Any idea?
You know, a lot of these initiatives that we're sharing as expansions are really low or no cost. So we have put in some requests for budgets next year. They're very minimal and modest. So we'll have that information once the budget is approved. But again, we're just looking to really utilize tools that we have existing as well as some low-cost options to expand.
And one of the goals for citizen engagement is inclusiveness. And what kind of special considerations are we making for the needs of our Hispanic
residents? Actually, that's a great question. And another one of the top priorities that council articulated during their retreat was multicultural citizen involvement. So that's an additional top priority. We had to address that in the last city council meeting about some ways to engage not only with our Latino community, but also seniors and other groups that we would look to engage in a special format.
Okay. And again, you're convinced that these people want to be engaged.
That's what we're finding. You know, we're really getting great feedback on the council outreach series. Folks are saying, this is great. It's been a nice opportunity to come and meet council or the mayor in an informal setting and just have dialogue and find out more. And the other idea is to get folks more engaged in the process, whether they want to join a board or commission or just even attending city council meetings. That will be a good way for us to measure our success.
Okay. The Erie neighborhood has appealed the city council's decision to provide a crosswalk across Deer Valley Drive at Erie Drive. Diane, what's the process for this appeal?
The process for this appeal is that the neighbors submitted things to the neighborhood traffic management process, NTMP, and that's a committee of staff cross-departmental from police to engineering to streets. And they had Parametrics, an outside company, take a look at what the volumes were coming off of Erie Drive. And the volumes were pretty low. And what City Council asked questions about and what staff provided as an opportunity was that we could look at some peak summer days as well, because you'll see people running across the highway with their bike or things like that. So what staff is going to do is do new traffic counts, new pedestrian and cyclist counts during some summer peak days, as well as look at some alternatives for can we add a crosswalk at the roundabout or somewhere that's safer. The issue there is that it's a 40-mile-an-hour area that goes down to 25 right before you hit the exit for Main Street. And adding a crosswalk there could actually make it dangerous for pedestrians, because they'll have a sense of, oh, it must be safe. There's a crosswalk here. And, you know, we have a lot of drivers, even if you're used to, like, the Hawk beacons that we have in town, if drivers from out of town might not be used to them. And to hit a crosswalk at a 40-mile-an-hour area is quite unusual.
Mm-hmm. So does the appeal then get just continued?
So what happens is, so staff is undergoing a process right now where we'll be doing the traffic counts in the summer and then providing an updated recommendation. And that will actually come back to council, and it can be appealed to council by the neighborhood.
Okay. And, you know, when we talk about perhaps an overpass there at that area, my figures show about $2.5 million. That's like pocket change when we talk about raising $38 million for Bonanza Flat.
That is absolutely not pocket change, right? And that's a city council-type decision, is do you want to put that kind of investment into something that might not be utilized that much? And so that is absolutely the question. And so the reality is, if you live in that neighborhood and you cross there, it's pretty scary to cross there. So I'm not saying that it's not important to the neighborhood. It's just a community priority question. And so that will be a question that I expect will be asked in the future of, do you want to add an overpass there?
Okay. What is the latest on Bonanza Flat?
Latest on Bonanza Flats is we are continuing to do fundraising. I talked to Wendy Fisher a little bit yesterday. I think we're about $3.5 million away. The leadership class is working on this, and we continue to work with partners. I saw the piece in the paper, and I actually met with Mike Davis from Wasatch County yesterday. He said it was on their agenda. And, you know, we very much appreciate the support we've received already from Wasatch County on that. And so we'll see where that goes.
Mm-hmm. What support have you gotten from Wasatch County other than Midway?
They've actually been number one, and importantly, because it is in their county, their county council and Mike Davis have been really supportive of the city buying it. So that's a first and foremost, particularly because of Foregone. It was entitled property, which is part of the reason why the price tag is where it's at. And so their just support of that happening at all is a big deal.
Yeah. And so we need less than $3 million, and yet with a single vote on Thursday, the council will be spending like nearly $400,000 on one vote. So, I mean, when you talk about, you know, the other $3 million, again, that's not much money for a $65 million budget.
It is actually a lot of money, right? It's and, you know, I'll go back to...
But this is one council meeting, one vote, and we're spending $400,000.
Sure. And last week, there was one council meeting that went 10 and a half hours, and they spent, in one vote, $2.5 million on our parking systems. The biggest challenge for any city council member, or one of the biggest challenges, is balancing priorities. And this council very much listens to the community. They've set the top priorities as housing, energy, and... transportation, because that's what they've heard from the community. Open space continues to be a top priority and is one of those things that, just because we have 7,000 acres of preserved open space, doesn't mean we're done. And so when this property became available, council went to the voters in an unusual step and said, this is what the property is. This is the name of the property. And we knew we weren't in first position to buy it. And I actually did not think we were going to be able to buy it.
So do we have city attorneys now working on what the future use of this property will be? I know you have, there are a lot of Brighton Estate property owners very concerned about access to their property, which they've had since 1960.
Yeah, the city has no intention of shutting down anyone's access, right? So we do plan on putting that under conservation easement. However, historically, we have never cut off anyone's access. So, for example, there is the road on Snow's Lane on the Armstrong property, that's actually included in the conservation easement, yet Herb and Shelley every day and that, you know, everyone who lives along Snow's Lane is in Kerry Armstrong are all able to use that road. So we don't have any intention of cutting off anyone's access. And we're not actually working yet on the details of that, simply because we are super focused on fundraising.
All right. Kimball Junction Transit Center charging station. The city's being asked to approve almost $200,000 to build the charging station at Kimball Junction. We've got two new electric Proterra buses coming next week. So why are we paying for a charging station that's outside of city limits?
So the city is the operational lead on the transit system, and it is a partnership with Summit County. It's a terrific partnership, and we're paying the capital infrastructure cost for this out of the capital budget that we use for the transit system. So the reality is we have lots of improvements coming to the system. In fact, I was just reviewing the recommendations from our staff team who looks at the operating budget for next year, and we're looking at hiring a significant number of bus drivers, and that's both for the new Camas route, as well as there'll be a lot of new routes in the county out in the Kimball Junction area. There'll be circulator routes as well as some neighborhood routes, so we need new drivers for that. And that will come out of the new transportation tax that voters approved in November.
Yeah, but I'm just guessing. I mean, how much did Summit County give Park City when we built our Old Town Transit Center? Nothing. I mean, even though they're part of the system, yeah.
Sure, that was historically a lot of the capital costs have been covered by the city. I will say though that on the Kimball Junction Transit Center, there was capital contributed both by the city and county, and the majority of that was paid for with federal funds.
All right. And then we're leasing the batteries for these new Proterra buses. And I'm guessing just in terms of what we have to change things as the technology moves around, or, I mean, is that charging station that we're paying $200,000 for going to last?
We our intention is to have it last. In 10 or 15 years, we may change it out. You know, this is an area where we are one of the early adopters. We've got the two coming in the near term. We have six coming by June. And so we were the recipient of the largest federal grant for these buses. And so we are on we try not to be on the bleeding edge, and we are on the bleeding edge on this one, which is why we're leasing the batteries, because we know the technology is going to improve.
All right. Also on the agenda with regard to land management code amendments, we're talking about the storefront enhancement program, staff making recommendations how to preserve the historic and unique feel of Old Town, as it's put. In other words, what are we trying to do? Legally prevent large chain stores from taking over Main Street? Is that what this is about?
We're trying to prevent kind of any one organization from trying to take over Main Street, right? So the idea that if you had a really large business that could come in and take 200 square feet of storefront and rip out all of the walls and make a giant mall or a single store on Main Street, that's not really the community character that we're looking for. So this would limit them to 50-foot storefronts. So one of the things, though, that we may see tomorrow is you may see City Council City Council will definitely have a public hearing, so a public is invited to attend. We may continue this because we're still in discussions with Bill White, and we've received a formal request from him to continue the item. But City Council had continued it to a date certain, we have it on the agenda.
You may have seen the signs posted in one business on Main Street, signs that say historic Park City becoming just like any city near you. And even Bob Redford couldn't afford the rents on Main Street. So what are we doing, if anything, to try and protect the small shops? I mean, we do a lot for affordable housing. Do we need to do something about the affordability of businesses on Main Street?
You know, it is a question that Jonathan Weidenhammer and his team have looked at, and it's one that we'll continue to look at. And it's a question of, you know, how far does government get into the free market, right? It's a really tough question. With affordable housing, we've said it's incredibly important to keep vibrancy in our community, to have it not be a ghost town in the summer or in the off season because no one actually lives here that for full time. I think what you may see as Sweet Alley, you know, this is we're probably talking about over the next 10, 15 years, as Sweet Alley becomes a second set of storefronts, you may see an opportunity for the city to build where we own some, you know, could we put storefronts on China Bridge is a question that we've looked at as staff. And so could you provide, you know, a low-cost artist space or something like that there?
Okay. Linda Jagger, Diane Foster, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you,
Leslie.
KPCW News Time 8:47. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, coming up Friday, April 21st, is the Summit Community Wellness Mental Wellness Solutions event. It's being put on by a new organization, the Summit County Mental Wellness Alliance, as well as Connect Park City and the Park City Community Foundation. In the studio with details, I have Summit County Health Department Director Rich Bola, along with Ollie Wilder. He's the Programs Director of the Park City Community Foundation. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Ollie, let's start with you. I think the Community Foundation was the one who may have taken the lead on this to form this new wellness alliance, mental wellness alliance.
Well, we really have been riding the coattails of a community impulse. The community really started to get the importance of improving mental health access, mental health services, and also addressing the substance abuse problem in the community. Luckily, Summit County Health Department was on board to help make things happen. Connect Summit County, the school district, the city, all kinds of partners started to come together. So Park City Community Foundation has served as kind of an initial convener of this group, it's really a community collaborative.
Yeah. So, Rich, I mean, how is this organization different than what the Connect group is doing in trying to destigmatize mental illness?
Well, Connect is part of the organization. So the efforts, in essence, what we did is the efforts that we've been doing behind the scenes with respect to coordinating partners, beginning the process of a strategic plan based on the assessment, and then ultimately implementation of that plan. We felt that we needed some structure to better define what that was. And so we really just kind of named that organization, and that is the Alliance. And within that are the work groups, the partners, et cetera. And Connect is a big part of that. Connect has been, as you know, really focusing on awareness, stigma, those issues. They're present on the work groups, et cetera. So they're one of the key partners in the Alliance.
Okay. So what's happening then on Friday, April 21st? It's all happening at the Blair Education Center at Park City Hospital.
Well, we are really pleased to invite the public, everybody in the community. You know, people in this community are very concerned about mental health and substance abuse, and I think a lot of them haven't known what they could do to help or how they could get involved. This event is a real opportunity to do that. It's on Friday, April 21st, so just a week and a half away. It's at the Park City Hospital. It's free, and it's really about getting people to talk about and think about what we can do in this community to make things better.
So who will get something out of being here?
Well, really, I would say anybody who has been affected by mental health or substance abuse issues, anybody who's a professional in that field or who works for an organization that is trying to do something about it, this is really open in general.
All right. So it won't be too wonky and technical and scientific.
No, if you're a wonk, there will be a few little breakout sessions at the end, and you can choose one that's a little more technical or not. But, you know, we're getting a keynote speaker, Leon Evans from San Antonio. And when he was in San Antonio, he helped create a major community coalition to help address mental health and substance abuse issues early on. So, for example, they created a crisis center. They created what they call a restoration center, which is where people go to recover and to sort of take the next steps. They did an amazing partnership with local law enforcement. These are all things that we could consider for this community. And so let's hear, how did they do it? They are a real success story.
Okay. We're going to hopefully be getting him on the local news hour to talk a little bit more about the San Antonio experience. Good. as it's been known. So as you mentioned, he's the keynote address at 9 o'clock, and then it's going to be followed by panels and workshops. Those include what? What are some of the topics there?
Well, for example, the first panel that will be sort of in the big room is with some folks talking about what are the various elements of the community do about this issue. So, for example, we've got Corey Levy of Vail Resorts coming in. He's their wellness manager for the whole corporation. And so he'll help us understand, well, what can businesses do on this front? We've got Tyler Walton from the Interfaith Council coming. Okay, what does the faith community do? Katie Wright, our executive director, will be there talking about Park City Community Foundation, but more so about what do individuals do, donors, philanthropists, what does the community do? So those are some of the folks we'll be talking early on. And then we'll actually have an open forum for everybody to chip in and say, here's my idea. What about this? How is this being addressed? And to really get the ideas flowing. And then we're actually going to end with a series of breakouts that are around youth prevention, around the criminal justice setting, and how do we deal with mental health and substance abuse there. The professional perspective, we've got several practitioners coming in, and also some folks who will tell personal stories about how they dealt with this issue in their family and how did they come out with hope and also some ideas for better solutions.
All right. So do you just show up or do you need to pre-register or how does that work?
It would be great if people pre-register. If they show up, we'll take them. We'd love them to come. And it's from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Friday, April 21st. If you want to RSVP, which we'd love you to do, go to summitcountyhealth.org/mentalhealth, and there's a link there to an RSVP form.
Okay. That helps you set up chairs.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Very
yeah.
helpful.
Yeah. Rich, the county has also just hired a new mental health and substance abuse coordinator. Who's this and what's he going to do?
His name is Aaron Newman, and we were incredibly lucky to have him apply, I think. He's got yesterday we had a staff meeting. He didn't know half of the people in the meeting. He interacts comfortably. He's a community coalition person. Most recently, he was at the National Ability Center. Before that, Weber State University. What he does and what he is going to do is Ollie and the Park City Foundation have been generous with their time and resource to really launch this process. Ollie and Aaron are going to work very, very closely together to hopefully do more or less a seamless transition. Ollie's always going to be a part of this. The foundation's always going to be a partner. But it was understood from the beginning that really the support at this level was temporary. So Aaron is going to step in and first initially drive forward that strategic planning process, development of the process, ultimately implementation of the process. And very importantly, one of the reasons we hired Aaron is he's got a long list of creating and sustaining programs. We are hopeful that out of this will come a coordinated, unified approach to addressing the strategic priorities that have been identified, and that those can be sustained. And so that's really his task.
Okay. While you're here, let me just quickly ask you, of course, we've got the perennial issue of outdoor dining and dogs. and I had asked the animal control director, Clay Coleman, about this yesterday. He says, that's your department. So
yeah,
what have we got
is.
Going on?
It is. Now, there's a swing. Well, dogs and mental health, they're related. We'll go with that. So they can contact. It's an annual permit. It's $300. They have to meet certain requirements as far as cleanliness and requirements as far as access to kitchen areas, et cetera, because the dogs are restricted to its pooches on patios. So they can go, again, to summitcountyhealth.org. There's a link on there. You go down the left side. There's pooches on patios, and they can do that through there.
What's the response been from those who are paying the permit? Do they feel like it's worth it?
Yes. Yeah, it's been very positive. And remember, I think it was about 3 years ago when we did the first Summit County Code of Health. It was in response to their request that we did this. We actually had to create a variance to the state food code to allow it. And so we responded to that, and it's been positive. We haven't had any issues. It's not a cheap permit. It's $300 a year. And that is because it requires additional inspections on our part, et cetera, has to pay for itself. But we've heard very positive things.
All right. Let's just take that one step further. It's a great breakfast talk, dog poop. We've heard just some amazing stories about the amount of dog poo along our trails and our dog parks. And what in terms of a health hazard, how big of a hazard is it? I mean, how big it is,
I don't know. And yes, it does disintegrate. But they carry disease. That's the fact. And we wouldn't want humans defecating along our trails. I believe we'd probably have major problems with that. And frankly, I don't view this as being any different. It is animal waste that does carry disease, does carry E. coli. And so I think it's, we've heard a lot of talk about partnerships and about people voluntarily cleaning up. Personally, I believe it goes beyond that. This is a health issue, and we have chosen at this point in time to take a kind of wait-and-see approach to it. But ultimately, I think probably the health department has to be part of the conversation.
We've heard of dog parks in Colorado being closed down because of the problem. I mean,
yes.
Do you have that enforcement authority?
Absolutely, yeah. And we actually have issued notices on ponds where dogs swim, et cetera, when there's been high levels of E. coli, Willow Park, for example. So it is a real issue. And, with that, I would say, reach out to the community. This can be avoided. I mean, it's as simple as that. You clean up after your dog. We're not having this discussion. And so, it's important that people do that.
All right. Well, let's continue the sewer discussion. What's the latest with the Silver Creek sewer line? We've got that approved. It's moving forward?
It is moving forward. We're issuing the contract to the company that won the bid. And I'm ecstatic. 2.5 years of work, literally, to get this thing done. And the council stepped up big time. The state stepped up big time. And obviously the property owners. So this is a big deal. We'll extend sewer to the lower Silver Creek commercial district. That ultimately will allow it at some point in time in the future to be extended up the hill. And it is a critically impaired water identified by both us and the state in Snyderville Basin. So this is a big deal, and it's a step forward.
And all of those new homes being built west of that, is that on sewer?
Yes. And that's actually what allowed this to happen. They came in probably about 5 years ago and requested over 60 septic permits. And I chose to not issue those. And so they ran sewer. And that's really kind of what got the dominoes going.
Okay. So, Ollie, Rich, anything else you wanted to mention?
We'd love people to come next Friday, April 21st, 9 a.m., to the Park City Hospital Blair Education Center.
Okay. Ollie Wilder and Rich Buller, thanks for your time
this
morning.
Thank you.